staff and swiped a wet slash under each of Phasma's eyes. Everyone in the Skyre had always worn such stripes, and Keldo's family had assumed it was to make them look more ferocious during battle. Now Keldo understood its true function. It made them strong enough to fight.
"Welcome to the Skyre, Phasma," Egil said with great solemnity. "Body to body, dust to dust."
Phasma bowed her head.
"Body to body, dust to dust," she repeated.
But before Egil could repeat the ritual with Keldo, Phasma took the tin from the girl called Siv and dipped her fingers in. Without asking Keldo the question, she drew the slashes on his face.
"Body to body, dust to dust," she said.
But Keldo didn't repeat the phrase at first. And, of course, he couldn't have answered the same question. Without his leg, he couldn't fight for the Skyre, could he? Phasma had seen to that. Egil's hand landed on the dagger on his belt, and the Nautilus went quiet as they waited for Keldo's oath.
"You have to say it,"
Siv whispered, her eyes wide and worried. The salve was cold and thick on Keldo's cheeks, a dark line hovering at the edge of his vision. It smelled of the sea, of death, of darkness. At least it didn't carry the scent of his father, for all that it was drawn over the same cheek the man had slapped what felt like years ago, when Keldo had been whole and his family had still been intact. He looked into Phasma's hard blue eyes and tried to remember what she'd looked like without the green paint, before he had seen her true face. He couldn't remember.
"Say it,"
she demanded. He had no choice. Egil and Phasma had made that plain.
"Body to body, dust to dust," he murmured.
Egil clapped him on the back and smiled.
"Welcome to the Skyre."
37. On the Absolution. Vi watches Cardinal's face as she finishes the tale. The trooper has his chin on his fist as he stares off into nowhere, his mouth set in a frown.
"So you're telling me they painted him with salve made from his own..."
"They both did. That was how they came to join the Skyre. She sacrificed her parents and family to survive." Cardinal shakes his head and stands.
"But she loved her brother. She avenged his death by killing Brendel. It makes a kind of sense."
Vi sits back, finally able to hold up her head and laugh at him properly. "Oh, is that what she was doing when she murdered Brendel? Avenging her brother? Funny. I thought she was getting rid of the only witness who knew her true past back on Parnassos. Who knew how far she would go to survive and succeed. Did she protest when Brendel slaughtered her people? Did she beg for peace or speak up for her warriors? Or did she consider it a tidy way to begin her new life with the First Order? It's the same way she joined the Skyre. She made a sacrifice, cut all ties, and pledged her allegiance to the stronger clan." He slashes a hand between them as if to erase what he's heard.
"This doesn't help me. Just because I'm convinced she's a traitor doesn't mean my superiors will care. They obviously don't."
Vi puts her hands on the table and tries to stand, but her legs aren't ready to hold her weight yet. She sits back down with a whoomp and drinks some more caff, hoping to invigorate her body before mobility truly becomes an issue. She's out of stories, and they both know it.
"Then they're fools. People don't change. Phasma will always be that little girl with the knife. The usurping Aratu with the sword. The stone-faced assassin casually flicking a beetle at the man who saved her."
"Again, according to this story, Phasma did nothing to betray the First Order. So why did you save it for last?"
"It's important," she says carefully, "because out of all the stories I heard on Parnassos, and I didn't tell you all of them, only the ones I thought would be personally resonant, this one chills me the most. Because it makes it clear that you can't win against Phasma. Not you, not anyone. No one will go as far as she will to survive." Although it won't convince his superiors, Cardinal knows Vi is right. Even as an orphan, he never took such bold, cruel means to survive. To think, as a teen girl, she purposefully disabled her brother with a knife and watched her parents die, then painted her body with what was left of them to cement her next loyalty. When she accepted that salve, she became Skyr. And he already knows what happened to the Skyr. Armitage thinks he's got a calf hound on a leash, but what he's got is a rancor just waiting for the gate to open. No one will see the real Phasma until the moment when what the First Order wants is no longer what she wants. One day, and it's coming, Phasma will betray them all. Just like she did her family, and just like she did the Skyr. Her loyalty means nothing. Nothing except that Armitage himself hasn't yet received a knife in the back. Cardinal is the only one who knows, and he's the only one who can stop her. The tiny interrogation chamber, or whatever closet it was built to be, suddenly feels very small and very close, and Cardinal can smell the spy's worsening body odors and the lingering stench of whatever part of her got fried by the shock. He won't let her know, but he no longer doubts her. At all. He knows that Vi is right, that everything she's told him is true. It all fits together too well to be some story she's spun just to save her skin. Iris beeps, and he checks his comm. It's almost time. Last chance. Is there any real proof? He asks. Your time is up, and the assembly won't wait. Vi drums her fingers on the table briefly and nods. There is something else, actually. But I need you to stay calm. I'm going to reach into a hidden pocket of my jacket and pull out what looks like a pretty scary knife.
What is it?
It's a pretty scary knife. But I'm not going to use it. I'm going to put it on the table, real gentle, and then put my hands behind my head. If I can. And what you're going to do is you're not going to lose your cool, and you're definitely not going to touch the blade in any way that might get either of us cut. Because remember, it's poisoned. Cardinal exhales in a disappointed sort of way, partially because he and his men searched her and missed a knife, and partially because he held her to a higher standard and somehow expected her to be honest about hidden weapons while he was torturing her on an enemy ship. She just shrugs. I'm part of the resistance. Of course I was going to resist. Do you want it or not? He pulls his blaster and holds it low, aimed for her belly. She rolls her eyes as if to say, aren't we past this? In response, he also rolls his eyes and says, just because we're on the same side of this argument doesn't mean we're on the same side of this fight. Now give me the knife and hurry. My time is short. She grins at him and slowly, slowly reaches into an interior pocket of her jacket. I'm going to use two hands now, she warns. And if he's honest with himself, he's not worried. She can't stand. She can barely lift her arms. Whatever she's got in there, well, she could have used it against him any time since he'd untied her, and she hasn't. Hasn't so much as caressed that pocket. So he nods and waits, his blaster ready. It takes some tugging, but Vi pulls a piece of shaped armor out of her jacket, puts it on the table, and pries it open. As soon as the sides fall apart, she scoots back from the table with her hands on her head, just as she promised. And there, lying on the table, is exactly what she described. A pretty scary knife. It's about the length of his hand and made of hewn stone. The blade is coated in a flaking, rusty powder peppered with grayish green, and the hilt is wrapped in leather stained a deep, rich chestnut with sweat and blood. It's a vicious, rough, inelegant thing, meant for making holes that can't properly close. This is one of Phasma's knives. The one she put in her brother's leg and Baldur's chest, so the story goes. Siv saved it during the claw battle. She was quick like that.
May I? Cardinal asks, and Vi tips her head.
You're the one running the show. Take it, please. But promise me you'll tell me what Phasma's face looks like after she sees it. Like she's seen a particularly vengeful ghost, I'd guess. Cardinal replaces his blaster and lifts the knife carefully by the hilt. He remembers the part of the story about Phasma using poisons based on the lichens of Parnassos. He's pretty sure that the med droids could identify and negate the poison, but he's not about to bet on it.
No one ever sees her face, he says softly. I never have, No one I know has. She has her own quarters, as I do, and never eats with her troops.
Doesn't anyone ever wonder what she's hiding?
Cardinal looks up, meets her eyes. I always have. I suppose I know now.
Vi looks to the door longingly.
So, how about it? You going to make good on our deal?
He shakes his head. It's still not enough. You know that.
So you're going to kill me?
His face wrinkles up in distaste. I don't want to. And he honestly doesn't.
But...
Vi is grinning.
You seem pretty happy about dying, he observes.
I have one more thing. Promise me again you'll let me go if I give it to you.
Feeling just as exasperated as he gets with his newest and youngest recruits, Cardinal sighs.
The terms have not changed. You give me evidence, I let you go. Absolutely last chance.
I'm reaching into my jacket again.
As she works another piece of armor out of the thick leather, Cardinal notes that he needs to train his men to search for non-metallic objects and to remove all outer garments from prisoners.
When Vi snaps open the piece of armor, Cardinal can't stop himself from grinning.
It's a clear plastoid specimen case, and inside is a glittering gold beetle, still alive.
You don't want to crack this open, Vi warns. I've seen these guys get to business, and it's not pretty. Toss a little water on the sand, and suddenly there were 1,000 of them.
Cardinal holds up the beetle and feels his heart lift.
Finally, finally he has concrete evidence. If he can get this beetle to the meeting, all they need to do is give it to the med droids, who will confirm that the beetle contains the same chemical signature that killed Brendel.
So, what are you going to do?
Vi sips the calf and watches him.
She's looking a little better, not quite as dehydrated. Perhaps her time unconscious actually gave her some rest. Cardinal feels a little bad about that. He shocked her harder than he meant to. But her eyes, golden and hard, don't blink as much as they should. How strange is it that he feels judged, and that he doesn't want to disappoint this piece of space trash spying for his enemy? Doesn't matter. It's time now. She's given him what he needs. He can't leave General Hux, Captain Phasma, and the other high-ranking officers waiting. Cardinal stands and puts on his helmet.
It's easier when Vi can't see his face. Vi sits up with a grunt and frowns at him.
I'm going to confront Phasma, he finally says. Show her the knife and the beetle. In front of General Hux and the other officers.
At that, Vi's lips quirk up in a smile.
Good luck. On a personal level, I hope you just absolutely destroy her.
That earns a chuckle. Thanks. Carefully, he picks up the knife and slides it into his holster behind the blaster. The beetle's specimen case goes into one of the ammo boxes on his belt. At the door, he turns back and makes the first of many decisions that could unravel everything he's worked so hard to build. All those years scraping by on Jakku. And then, the years as he struggled to conform to the First Order's ideals, undergoing constant tests and programming under Brendel's training. Years rising through the ranks, fighting in the Sims, besting his mates and challenging himself to succeed. Everything he's worked for and toward. Well, it all changes here, doesn't it? I'll leave the door unlocked. I'm taking Iris with me. Count to 1,000 and then do what you will.
Vi raises one eyebrow.
Do as I will?
Escape if you can. Sleep if you have no other choice. Die in here if that seems easier. If anyone catches you, I'll tell them I met you on my rounds and you overpowered me and escaped. Hell, maybe I'll tell them you had force powers. They'll hunt you down with extreme prejudice, but it won't be my fault. Or my problem.
There's another option, she says.
That gets his attention. He was just about to punch in the code to open the door, but instead, he turns to consider her.
Defect! Escape with me! Come join the Resistance, or at least take their cash for some intel and run. They'll give you a full pardon. If you can't do that, I can still help you get off ship and onto any Outer Rim planet you like. Start a new life! You don't have to be on the losing side here!
For just a moment, he considers it. But then the last words hit him like a slap. I'm not on the losing side. You are. Good luck getting off the ship. Without another word, Cardinal punches in the code and steps into the hall with Iris floating in his wake. He doesn't watch Vi as the door slides shut. She's no longer his concern. He has everything he needed from her. The truth, the understanding, the beetle, and this knife. She might be on the wrong side, but he agrees with resistance spy Vi Marotti on one thing. Cardinal is on his way to show Phasma the knife, and he only wishes he could see her face. XXXVIII. On the Absolution. The Absolution is a very large ship, and it's a long walk from Vi to the assembly room. With every step, Cardinal feels more desolate. Phasma is an empty fiction, a legend built of lies. And the First Order, and even Brendel Hux himself, chose Phasma over Cardinal. Brendel, knowing Phasma was out for herself, knowing she would sell out her own family to get what she wanted. Brendel had looked at Phasma and seen a great leader, someone to put on propaganda posters and raise up on a pedestal. And Brendel paid for that mistake. It's hard for Cardinal to think of what it must have been like for Brendel, dying of a mysterious disease, a deadly riddle that even the most state-of-the-art med droids couldn't solve. Did Brendel recognize the symptoms? Try to tell the droids what was happening to him? Did Brendel know that Phasma was behind it? Did he look through his closet for some remnant of Parnassos that might hide a glittering gold carapace? Did he call in Armitage as he floated in the Bacta, becoming more and more liquid himself, and speak to the boy about the future of the First Order, the only thing the two Hux men could wholeheartedly agree on? Did Brendel suggest then that Phasma be lifted toward greatness, hailed as the perfect trooper? Or did he whisper to Armitage that Phasma had killed him and urge the boy to give her whatever she wanted so long as it benefited the First Order and kept at least one Hux alive? Did he perhaps tell Armitage to drop Phasma out the airlock? And did he then watch his son slowly smile and shake his head no? This is what it must be like, Cardinal thinks, to lose one's faith. He knows everything. And now he knows that Armitage knows everything, or at the very least, Armitage knows the most dangerous, damning parts. The First Order would rather have Phasma as she is, a bloodthirsty, disloyal murderer, than an honorable, faithful, true-believing, by-the-books soldier like Cardinal. Cardinal, who has done everything they've ever asked. Cardinal, who teaches and comforts and encourages the children. Cardinal, who has given everything he has for the First Order. Thoughts and doubts and rage run on repeat in his head as the lift goes up and up and up. His fingers clench and unclench, and sweat drips down the back of his neck. But he's a captain in the First Order, and he will show no outward signs of weakness. Before, such meetings were always exciting. Cardinal's troops were praised, and he was congratulated for his ongoing excellent service to the First Order. But since Phasma became a captain, Cardinal has lost more and more of his program to her, his recruits taken to the finalizer earlier and earlier. Now is his chance to stop losing face and start regaining control. Today, whatever they think their meeting will be about, it will become about revealing and stopping Phasma before she betrays the First Order. As Cardinal stalks the long corridors to the assembly room, he prepares his speech in his head. What he'll say, how he'll say it, how to condense hours and hours of Vi's storytelling details into the simple facts that will condemn Phasma completely. Even if Armitage already dismissed his concerns, the younger Hux is not the only authority in the First Order. The others, perhaps even Kylo Ren, will want to know about the monster hiding in plain sight, her disloyalty merely a matter of time and opportunity. Perhaps they too will wish to see the face she wears behind her mask. Considering what Cardinal now knows about Armitage, he understands that this meeting is his only chance to make his case. A man willing to let Phasma kill his own father would have no problem ending Cardinal himself. Cardinal is willing to take that risk.
He's given himself plenty of time to get there, as he always likes to be early for such events. As he turns the corner where he last passed Captain Phasma, the air seems somehow colder. A few officers are chatting in front of the assembly room, their black uniforms spotless and their pointy caps perfectly straight. Armitage Hux appears behind them with Phasma in his wake, and the officers go silent and duck into the room. Armitage sees Cardinal, stops, nods, and goes in. Phasma pauses. She makes no move whatsoever, no nod or shrug, or anything to suggest there's a human being under her shiny chrome armor. Without a word or even her usual nod to Cardinal, she follows Armitage into the room, and Cardinal picks up his pace, his cape snapping as he hurries, but not enough to make him appear worried. The door is closed, and he taps in the code, but it doesn't budge. A sense of panic settles around his shoulders as he looks up and down the hall. He checks the time, but he's still 30 minutes early. No one else appears to be coming. He tries the code again, and still it fails. When he looks to Iris, her beeping suggests that she, too, is baffled. And Iris is never baffled.
General Hux, has the code been changed?
He says into his comm. He hears a sigh, and Armitage says,
It has. Your presence is no longer necessary. Please continue in your regular duties. But, sir, a good trooper does not challenge his superior officer, CD-0922. Yes, sir. Dismissed.
The comm goes silent. The hall is empty. It's over. On the Absolution. Cardinal has no choice but to do what he's been told. For all his recent rebelliousness, he was programmed by the best to be the best, and he has a job to do. It's kind of terrifying how easily his training takes over, sending him on autopilot. He puts Vi Marotti out of his mind and returns to his duties in the barracks. The children are at dinner now. He's missed their training sessions, something that's never happened before when he wasn't directly under orders. As he moves among them in the cafeteria, he asks how they did and checks the scores posted on the wall. He was right about FB-0007. The boy did well once FE-1211 was out of the picture. He makes a note to shuffle their groups around again soon, to find better fits for the burgeoning leaders in ways that will maximize their performance. He can't let conniving FE-1211 have all the glory. The irony is not lost on him. Taking his tray to go, he makes a new request of the cafeteria droid. Liquor. The droid isn't programmed to look surprised or care about such things, and it merely hands over a bottle as if this is an everyday occurrence. Cardinal is a captain, after all, and Brendel afforded him many privileges that he's never yet taken advantage of. The bottle is nothing special, nothing that would deserve the old General Hux's fine crystal decanter, but Cardinal wouldn't know a good vintage if he tasted it anyway. He simply needs, for a while, to forget. Back in his quarters, he takes off his helmet and throws it across the room, before ripping off his armor and tossing it on the floor without polishing it. Iris beeps in alarm, and he orders her into a closet so she can't witness his aberrant behavior. He can't stand the stink of his own body, the stench of fear and sadness, so he strips off his bodysuit and takes the hottest shower he can. If only the heat could burn off the parts of him that are wrong, boil off his skin, and leave him as new and innocent as he was before he ever met Vi Marotti. Sure, he'd detested Phasma back then, but at least he'd been able to stand her. At least he'd believed that she wanted the same things he wanted, held the same ideals, and fought for the same allegiance. But he can't go back. Can't forget what he knows. Still, he can drink, and he has heard that liquor makes a man forget like nothing else. Or better yet, stop caring. The first few sips burn going down, which is what he wanted to feel anyway. Then his lips go numb, and a fire pools in his stomach, and he finally feels his taut muscles relax. The next cup tastes much better, and the third one gets tossed down so fast that taste isn't an issue. Something drips into the empty cup, plunking in the dregs of the amber liquid, and he realizes he's crying.
Cardinal hasn't cried since Jakku. He hasn't had a reason to.
Sometime later, he blacks out on his bed. And it's a relief.
When his personal alarm announces the next shift, Cardinal has no idea who he is, where he is, or what's happening. Everything is sticky and unclear, and his head is pounding. It's a struggle to open his eyes, to stand, even to shower. Every other day on the Absolution, he's woken with purpose, ready to face the day and make the First Order proud. Today he doesn't even shave, just shoves his helmet down over beard scruff. He doesn't have time to polish his armor, just has to scrape it up off the floor and fling it on before the children's klaxon rings. He finds Phasma's knife by the half-empty bottle of booze and wraps it in a piece of cloth, tucking it into one of the ammo boxes on his belt along with the beetle. He chokes out a sad laugh. It turns out evidence only works when you're allowed to present it. At breakfast, he feels as if he's merely watching someone else's life unfold. The children greet him and smile and show deference, and he goes through the motions, all the while feeling hollow and sick inside. He gets his tray, and the cafeteria droid offers him an extra packet he hasn't received before.
"For the hangover,"
it says, its voice toneless. Cardinal glares back at Iris, who bobs as if with a shrug, and he considers what it would feel like to take a droid apart with his bare hands. But instead of finding out, he simply takes the packet without thanks. He's about to remove his helmet to eat with the children when he realizes that his face is most likely a complete wreck. Instead, he takes his food to his room and finds it more tasteless than usual. The hangover packet is a powder, which turns his water orange and slightly fizzy. Once the liquid is down, the dull pounding in his skull lets up a bit, but the emptiness around his chest doesn't budge. There's an ache deep down that won't go away. He gets to the training room before the children and surveys what he's always considered his domain. Spotlessly clean, perfectly maintained, everything exactly where it should be to maximize their training. He stands on the high balcony overlooking the fighting arenas on one side and the window to the cavernous sim room on the other. 5 technicians sit at the computer banks, waiting for his word on which sim to run. It occurs to him that sims are not real, and he wonders what it's like for his new recruits, serving their first planet-side tours under the watchful eye of Phasma. To go from Cardinal's well-run sims and patient training to holding a real weapon and taking human lives under Phasma's command. Many of his fellow soldiers seem to enjoy such work, but Cardinal always found it distasteful, if necessary. Phasma probably relishes it. As he watches the tiny children in their equally tiny armor arrive and pound on one another with riot batons, he realizes that he's going to find out, and soon, what it's like to fight when there's something very important at stake. 40. On the Absolution. As the day goes on and Cardinal walks through his life like a ghost, trailed by a droid that now feels less like an accomplice and more like a nursemaid, he feels an increasing pressure in his chest. He takes his tray back to his room at dinner but has no appetite. Even the water is hard to swallow, as if there's a knot in his throat. Disgusted, he tosses it all in the garbage chute and heads for the shower. Last night's shower was a slapdash, angry attack on his flesh. Tonight, he moves through his First Order outlined ablutions with a new sense of calmness, taking pride and comfort in every small step. He washes as they taught him at Brendel's Academy, left, down, up, right. He uses the precise amount of cleanser. He dries off in the way that minimizes time. He shaves with absurd precision, taking satisfaction in the rasp of his razor. This time, he does not nick his skin. When he shaves his head, he feels as if a new creature has been revealed. "My name is Cardinal," he says to the mirror. "Once CD-0922. Before that, Archex. But now my name is Cardinal. I am a decorated captain of the First Order, and I am a loyal soldier." As he puts on a fresh bodysuit, he can't help noticing the muscles he's developed through years of hand-to-hand combat, running, and calisthenics. He's a man in the prime of his life, in top shape, He can outrun any of his charges, do pull-ups or push-ups until everyone else is winded. Just because he hasn't needed or accessed his power in several years doesn't mean he's helpless. Before putting on his armor, he goes through it piece by piece and shines it until there are no scuffs, no rough places. He selects a freshly pressed captain's cape from the row in his closet and arranges it flawlessly over his shoulder. Once he's fully dressed, he checks the boxes of ammo on his belt, then each of his weapons, ensuring his blaster is primed, ready, and set to kill. Phasma's knife still sits on his table. He recalls inspecting it last night, holding it up to the light as if to discover some secret hidden in the blood-flecked blade. Now he returns the knife to the box with the beetle on his utility belt, unwrapped and blade down. As he stands before his mirror, he sees a soldier that anyone would be proud to command. A leader and a warrior, flawlessly trained and adept at split-second responses to any situation. Brendel Hux once told him that together they were training a new generation of stormtroopers that would far surpass the flawed troopers of the Empire. Cardinal believed him then, and he still believes him. Cardinal knows in his heart that he's unbeatable. The only problem is that he now suspects Captain Phasma is much the same. As he puts on his helmet, he realizes that it's become home. Yes, sure, the Absolution is home, and these austere quarters are home, but Cardinal feels most himself when he's polished to a shine and seeing the world through the polarized lenses of his helmet. Is it strange, he wonders, that he's more himself in a uniform? In a costume? Up until yesterday, there was nothing strange at all. Nothing to question. Now, staring at his fully dressed image in the mirror, he understands that his humanity has been erased. The violently red uniform is just the outward expression of what they've done to a small boy found half-starving alone on a backwater planet. They've made him what he is, the First Order and Brendel and even Armitage. He's not the self-made man he's always considered himself to be. He's just another product, another perfect cog stamped out and plucked from a long belt of cogs to do his part in a larger machine. He was happy as a cog. But now that he knows the entire machine is a fraud, that Phasma and Armitage are selfish killers who care more about their own advancement than about the First Order, what's the point? Those children he's training will just graduate to Phasma's care and be molded in turn into whatever sort of monster is requested from on high. It's sickening. It's awful. And as Cardinal sees it just now, it's all Phasma's fault. Cardinal's eyes are locked with the reflective darkness of the helmet lenses. What color are his own eyes? Does he even remember? Before he realizes what he's doing, his fist shoots out and shatters the glass. This time, Iris does not beep in alarm. The droid appears unsurprised. Turning on his heel, he marches out the door, and Iris follows. It's only a short walk to where he's going. The training room. Phasma is known for her personal attention to every part of the stormtrooper training regime she oversees, and every time she leaves the finalizer to visit the Absolution, she fully dissects every component of Cardinal's curriculum, taking note of his students' performance and the battle simulations they've been running. Before, he's merely seen this as an intelligent way to transition the children's education as they age out of his barracks and into hers. But now he recognizes it for what it is. Arrogant meddling and intrusive surveillance. It's just another reason to hate her, but at least it means that he knows exactly where to find her today. The door slides open for him, so at least General Hux hasn't taken decisive action based on their little discussion earlier and locked him out of his own training room. After being excluded from the meeting, Cardinal has half expected to be marched out of his own quarters and tossed in the brig. If Cardinal knows Armitage, and he's known the weasel since he was a snotty and vindictive child, he knows that he won't be allowed to continue in his current capacity for long. Much as Cardinal gives demerits to recruits who tattle on other recruits, Armitage surely keeps a running tally of marks against him, and this is one scorch mark that can't be erased with a good polishing. Not that it matters. Cardinal sees what he wants. Looking down from the balcony into the sim room, he watches Phasma. She's down there in full uniform, helmet and cape on, riot baton in hand, working through a simulation Cardinal personally programmed as the graduation test for his oldest recruits. She's destroying it, of course, smashing even his best students' scores. Taking the remote control, as he so often does when interrupting a sim mid-battle to offer instructions or admonition to his students, he walks down the stairs and opens the door to the sim room. Phasma doesn't notice him at first, as she's in total immersion mode, all her senses fully focused on fighting a particularly agile Twi'lek in resistance gear, so he hits pause, freezing the scene mid-fight.
"And how do you find my program, Captain Phasma?"
he asks. Even through the helmet's vocoder, he sounds mocking, and he doesn't care whether she senses it. She unfolds from her fighting stance, lets her shock baton drop, and turns her head slowly, as if he represents zero threat, and she's surprised to learn he can speak.
"You know how I feel, Captain Cardinal. Your numbers are superlative, but your clever simulations and Armitage's automated regimens are no match for real experience. No matter how pretty, such insubstantial simulations can't compare to a flesh-and-blood foe."
Her hand brushes the Twi'lek's face, then slaps it. The droid underneath the holographic Twi'lek skin bobs from the hit.
"You can't have a real reaction to a fake fight. You never know a soldier's true worth until they've stood on the battlefield, faced with death."
Cardinal clicks the remote, and the hologram disappears. Sand, beasts, droids, civilians, obstacles, and enemy combatants disappear to reveal a huge room filled with combat holodroids in standby mode. The walls are lined in weapons and lit coldly from far above. It's just them now. Captain Cardinal, Captain Phasma, and their single witness, a floating droid silently recording their every word.
"So you'd what? Have me send children into real battle? Award them points for murdering civilians and possibly one another? My job is to make them soldiers. You're the one who makes sure they're killers."
Phasma steps closer, and Cardinal hates that she's taller than he is, forcing him to look up.
"Correct, Captain. I do make sure they're killers, because that's what the First Order demands. Courage, tenacity, and the ability to pull the trigger when the trigger needs pulling. That is how supremacy is won. You've never seen actual combat yourself, have you?"
Cardinal shrugs and casually pulls out his red blaster. And he's hit the bullseyes on three targets at the far end of the room.
"Of course I have, and I always received top marks. I consider it my duty to do as the First Order wills. I do as they command to the best of my ability, as Brendel Hux trained me to do. Even Supreme Leader Snoke speaks highly of my results and my skills. If you think my lack of recent experience is a problem, I suppose you could take it up with him. Or Armitage Hux. He does seem to appreciate a soldier with first-hand experience of murder."
The cold way Phasma cocks her head reminds Cardinal of some predator in the wild. He has her attention now completely, and he's utterly sure that this is a predicament few people have survived. In the chrome of her helmet, all he sees reflected is a field of bright red.
"You seem to be hinting at something rather dangerous, Captain Cardinal."
Cardinal rams his blaster home in its holster.
"A loyal soldier never challenges his superiors. But as we are both captains, I suppose I do have some questions about your commitment to upholding First Order ideals. You're wasting my time with these childish games, Cardinal. If you have something to say, say it."
The moment stretches out. It's impossible to lock eyes when both parties are wearing helmets, but Cardinal feels like whoever blinks first will lose. In the end, he isn't sure what to say. His training prevents him from directly accusing a fellow officer of murder, even if he's 99.9% sure she's guilty.
"That's what I thought,"
Phasma says, clipped voice dripping with disgust.
"Coward."
Every wretched thought from the last day coalesces into rage.
Cardinal snatches up her dropped riot baton, which flares to life the moment his magnetized gloves activate it. With a scream of rage, he swings for Phasma, desperate to feel the weapon collide with actual flesh, his enemy's flesh. But Phasma is too quick for him, spinning out of range and darting to the rack of batons on the wall. Ripping off her cloak with one hand, she whips her baton into position and charges at him, shouting a war cry of her own. The ululating scream echoes off the high walls, and Cardinal's training kicks in. He runs to meet her. On the Absolution. It's clear from the first strike that the stakes of this fight are different. Their batons clash hard, the impact jarring up Cardinal's arms, making his bones ache. He spars regularly with SC-4044 and his other subordinate instructors, but it's always a friendly, relaxed experience. Not this. This madness. Phasma beats at him mercilessly, grunting and shrieking with each impact. As he parries, his body reacting half a second before his mind can keep up, he seems to separate into two selves. One is acting on autopilot, his muscles and nerves perfectly timed as if he's a droid running a program. The other is a purely emotional being filled with rage and fear and fire, and his lip curls as he merges those two selves, putting the power of fury into his strikes.
You're weak, Cardinal. You strike like you're following directions someone else wrote,
Phasma says, her voice a growl and her accent far less clipped.
You're a killer.
He goes for an uppercut, but she slashes his baton aside, making him stumble and recover.
If you don't fight like it's a fight to the death, are you really fighting?
She lands a hit on his armor, and electricity rides over him but can't pierce his suit.
They should write murderer under your poster, not exemplar. Those children look up to you, Phasma. As well they should!
His every parry is thrust aside. She's bigger, but she's fast, and each hit echoes through his nerves. He glances at Iris, but she's powerless to help him. He never programmed her to defend his life, and she couldn't harm a First Order soldier in any case. She can only watch.
You're only out for yourself. Your loyalty means nothing. Brendel should have left you where he found you,
he shouts. Their batons clash and hold, and Cardinal pushes as hard as he can, his teeth bared as sweat drips down his forehead under his helmet.
Your loyalty is disgusting,
Phasma spits.
You were like a dog pissing itself at Brendel's feet. Do you think he cared about you outside of using you? Do you think he respected you? Do you think Brendel Hux was worthy of your allegiance, your adoration? If you think I'm a killer, then you should have gotten to know the real Brendel, who he was off his ship.
The metal squeals as Cardinal struggles to hold her baton away. It takes everything he has not to fall back, but he's not about to let Phasma see any weakness.
Oh, I've heard. I've heard all of it. I know you killed Brendel, and I know you killed your own brother, and I know you let everyone else you ever pretended to love die. As long as you survived, what did you care?
Phasma steps back, causing Cardinal to stumble forward. Her baton sweeps up and cracks against his helmet, making the readouts buzz and glitch and his ears ring. In the moment that he's confused, she hooks his ankle and he goes down on his back. But he's been trained for this, too. He rolls with the energy, right over his shoulder and stands again, baton at the ready. She wags a finger and tisks.
I know all your moves, Cardinal. I've studied your programs, run your sims. There is nothing you can do that would surprise me.
The only answer, it seems, is to step back and throw his baton at her head. As she ducks, Cardinal tackles Captain Phasma to the ground. This is not a First Order sanctioned move. First Order stormtroopers are taught never to release a weapon. Dropping a weapon gives the enemy the advantage, and another weapon. And disregarding his training works because Phasma goes down like a sack of sand, her chrome armor clanking against the floor. As she flails, Cardinal exerts his weight and reaches for her knife, pulling it out of his ammo box and aiming for the bodysuit peeking out from the armor at her neck. It's a dirty move, but that's the biggest gap in her armor, and he knows he'll only get one chance. Before it sinks into flesh, the knife is stopped. He presses harder, but it just rasps against the slick metal on Phasma's forearm.
She snakes her other arm around his neck, pulling him close and trapping him. Unable to move, Cardinal is stunned to find this is the closest he's been to another adult human. He's never embraced a woman, never put on his plain uniform to mingle in one of the ship's bars, or taken leave off the Absolution to visit a backwater world's darker alleys. Even though their skin is hidden under layers of armor and thick body gloves, even though they're both wearing helmets, there's a strange intimacy here that Cardinal can't process.
"What are you going to do?"
he asks.
"Kill me?"
His eyes flash up to Iris. Phasma chuckles, a dark sound.
"I fought too hard and lost too much getting to where I am to risk everything by killing you. But if you were to bleed out after this terrible training accident, I doubt General Hux would investigate the incident too closely. We had a little talk about you at the assembly. You and your recent, what did Armitage call it? Break with reality. It was put forth that perhaps the repetition of our programming might need to be tweaked to keep any other recruits from reaching your same sad end. There was some discussion of implementing my far superior training methods and phasing out your little game room here. Once you're gone." "No,"
he says.
"That would be the end of the First Order. Wrong. It would only be the beginning."
Phasma executes an escape that flips Cardinal onto his back on the ground. She's on top, in the position of power now. But the fight has gone out of him. What good will it do? If he kills Phasma now, if he's even able to do so, which is doubtful, his life is still over. If Armitage is against him, the entire First Order is against him. He doesn't know how they weed out the undesirables, but he knows it happens. He's watched children disappear over the years, or at least discovered their absence in the training room, their serial numbers erased from the records and scoreboards as if they'd never existed. They were always the slow ones, the clumsy ones, the ones who fought their programming or questioned the sims or pushed back when given commands, almost like they were wired incorrectly. He's always known it has to happen, but he's never asked why or how. Maybe that's part of the training, to not miss what's gone, what's been taken away, to never question. Now that he's questioning, of course he can't last here. His head falls back, and his helmet clanks against the floor.
"They made me. I'm what I'm supposed to be,"
he murmurs, whether to himself or his enemy.
"Ah, Cardinal, that's your problem. You were only ever meant to be the tool, not the hand that wields it. You're what Brendel thought he wanted, a dull creature he crafted to do his will. But me? I'm what he didn't know he needed. I am your evolution. And that means you're dead weight. Extinct."
With that, he feels a hot, sharp pain in the side of his chest, just under his shoulder pauldron. He doesn't have to look down to know that it's her knife. She holds it up between them, considering the bead of blood on the jagged edge.
"I haven't seen this knife in a very long time. Where did you find it?"
Cardinal coughs and gulps.
"Parnassus. Then it sounds like I'll need to make another visit and see who survived. We can't have witnesses running around with evidence, can we?"
His feet and hands are starting to go cold. For all his years of training and fighting, he's never actually taken an injury, anything like this. In his head, he hears a gentle voice intoning, "Use a belt or rope to make a tourniquet between the stab wound and the heart. If an artery has been punctured, you will require immediate medical attention from a First Order authorized med droid. Try to keep the injury above your heart and your head raised. If you relax, you have a better chance of surviving. If you suspect that you will not survive the wound, attempt to kill the enemy combatant and alert your sergeant so that they may plan around your failure." Cardinal can't do any of those things. And he's pretty sure she hit a lung. Maybe worse. It's all happening so fast.
"Recorders everywhere,"
he says.
"They're always watching."
He lurches up as the knife plunges back in on the other side, even deeper.
I've become quite adept over the years at shutting down cams and erasing extraneous feeds. Someone has to make the trash disappear around here.
The weight leaves his chest, and Phasma stands over him. She pulls out her blaster, shoots, and Iris falls to the ground, sparking. The droid rolls a bit and gives a sad beep as her red light flashes out.
Nice try, Cardinal. But you never had a chance. There's a reason they put me on the posters instead of you. Oh, and look. You brought me an old friend.
His helmet turns sideways just in time to watch her stomp on the specimen case that's tumbled out of his open ammo box. The beetle crunches amid the plastoid, the gold shards of its carapace glimmering in the gooey black of its guts. He's got one last play. He reaches for his blaster. On the Absolution. But he's not fast enough. She sees his move and kicks his hand, hard enough to break bones. He never even touches the blaster. All Cardinal can do is lie there, suffering. For all the time he's spent in the sim room, creating and running and practicing and instructing, he has never seen it from this angle, on the ground. Reaching up, he pulls the knife out of his chest and is rewarded with a fresh gout of blood. Only Phasma could slam a blade between the armor plates and deep into the meat of him with such fatal accuracy. He can barely breathe. She definitely got a lung. Not that it matters what she did or didn't hit. He knows well enough that the blade is poisoned. That's why he tried to stab her with it in the first place. As his blood drains away, so does his anger. For all his talk of loyalty, integrity, obedience, allegiance, now he knows that when it comes down to it, words mean nothing in the face of power. It was his first real fight, and Phasma was right. He lost. All the sims and sparring in the galaxy couldn't match an entire lifetime spent fighting to survive. At that last moment, the knife flashing down in his hand, did he flinch? Did he soften? Did he lack the instinct for such a personal kill? Or is she just that good at reading an opponent and controlling the fight? He still doesn't quite know what happened, whether he missed or she parried. All he knows is that his blade didn't find flesh, and hers did. A noise reminds him that he's not alone. Phasma is looking down at him, and he sees a field of red reflected in her helmet, armor and blood mixed.
Are you still in there, CD-0922?
She asks.
Still trying to understand how you lost? Hypocrite,
he mutters, although it's an effort.
I'm not a hypocrite just because I don't believe the same things you believe. Liar. Yes, and who isn't? Armitage doesn't reward honesty. He rewards results.
He coughs, and wetness splatters the inside of his helmet.
Monster!
Instead of answering this accusation, Phasma does the unthinkable. She takes off her helmet. No one in the First Order has ever seen Phasma without her helmet, to Cardinal's knowledge. He wasn't lying when he told Vi that. When he still spent time among men his own age, it was a hotly debated topic, whether the tall warrior gleaming on the posters was actually hideous under her mask, or terrifyingly beautiful. Now Cardinal knows, and he's actually quite surprised. There are those blue eyes Siv told Vi about, and a crown of soft gold hair haloing pale white skin. A deadly beauty, and he's the only one who knows. He can well imagine the dark green stripes under her eyes, her teeth bared to attack. She kicks him, and when he can't do anything but groan, she kneels and pulls off his helmet, setting both of their helmets side by side like an audience, one shiny silver and one red. Everyone is a monster, she says, and her voice is so different without the vocoder.
I'm not...
Come now, Cardinal. Surely you've done something rebellious in your past. Something you regret? Besides attacking an officer tonight, of course.
I did what I had to do,
he sputters.
To get to you.
And I did what I had to do to get to me as well. I don't regret it. That's the difference between us. I know what I am, and I embrace it. I'm proud of it. I fought for everything that I have, every bit of what I am. Now that you see what you are, you despise it. You're ashamed. Then look where that's gotten you. She shakes her head as if she's disappointed in him and puts her helmet back on. He watches, sideways and through a red haze, as she reattaches her captain's cape and slides the knife into her own ammo box. As she walks away, he feels a sudden desperation.
You're just going to leave me here? Not even going to finish me?
He taunts, his voice a whisper.
I did finish you. You just haven't realized it yet.
The door closes behind her. Cardinal's world goes dark. 43. On the Absolution.
Oh, emergency brake. I knew red was your color, but not quite this much red.
Somehow, Cardinal is able to open his eyes, and he sees the strangest sight. A stormtrooper bending over him and speaking with the voice of Vi Marotti. How did she manage it? He doesn't want to know. He'd hate to think that the Absolution has strategic weaknesses that could be so easily infiltrated by a half-dead spy. But perhaps she's not as damaged as she led him to believe. And perhaps he doesn't care so much about the Absolution anymore.
Phasma's knife,
he says.
Poison.
Vi's helmet shakes.
I hate to say I told you so, but...
He gives a sad chuckle and feels hot blood spray his chin.
Told me so.
He wants to tell her to leave him alone so he can die in peace. His body, at least, has gone numb. There are worse places to die than his own training room, but he doesn't want the last thing he sees to be a resistance spy, especially not one gloating while wearing the armor he once wore himself.
Go away,
he murmurs, turning his head away.
We had a deal.
But instead of leaving, she puts his helmet back on him and rolls him over onto what he realizes is a hover gurney. They always keep a few in the training room in case emergency medical care is needed. Soon he's floating, in mind and body, as Vi pushes him somewhere.
What are you doing?
He asks.
Saving you,
she responds curtly.
Now tell me how to get to the hangar or shut up.
Even half dead, he knows his ship, and he's able to give her a few directions. The wounds don't hurt as much right now, but he can feel the fever heating up, hear his blood beating in his ears.
Waste of time,
he mutters.
Parnassus fever. Can't amputate my lungs.
No, but I can put you in a medically induced coma and get you to a state-of-the-art medbay.
He wants to laugh, but can barely breathe. It's like he's drowning in his own blood.
Why?
Is all he can manage. She nods tersely as they pass marching troopers, then leans close.
Because I am an infinitely hopeful creature, and I still think you can be flipped.
Tough chance.
It's one I'm willing to take. Thing is, I think you're actually a good man under all that vicious red armor.
He floats in and out of consciousness. The next time he looks up, they're in the main hangar bay. Then she's maneuvering him into a ship. Not hers, something else. Something slightly bigger, but still fast. Then they're in the air, and she's barking into her calm. And then, blessedly, he sees the dark calm of space, and he's dumbfounded to realize she might actually get away with it.
Where are we going?
He asks. Hyperspace swirls overhead, and he struggles to stay awake for her answer.
Vi stands over him and removes her stormtrooper helmet, giving him that wry smile he now knows very well.
There are dark circles under her eyes, and the torture chair left a scorch mark across her forehead. What a pair they are. Mortal enemies, each of them about half dead.